Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Carl Kafer from KS ISF and FNS and Deviant Legion Network, and we're very, very happy to have Vicki Love with us as she debuts her show on Deviant Legion Network, Vicki Loves Sci-Fi. And let me get it over to our host, Miss Vicki Love. Vicki?
Hi, everyone, and thank you, Carl, for being so generous. A lot of you have listened to my shows before on KZDAD Radio, and I'm not leaving KZDAD. Right now, my very beloved friend, Stephen Ronquillo, who is producer, creator, mastermind, and genius behind all our shows on KZDAD, has been ill, and he, of course, is taking time to recover and regain his strength. And so because I just retired from my crazy teaching job, I wanted to start my show up again. And so Carl and Deviant Legion has been generous enough to give me a 30-minute time slot to start this up as we await Stephen's good health to return. So we're looking at it as a win-win, okay? Isn't that what we should say, Carl? Win-win?
Absolutely. And I just want to say also for those that are listening on Deviant Legion, Stephen is my former partner and someone I'd love and care about very, very much. So as always, our hearts go out to him as he recovers. So
yes.
I just want to say that.
Yes. And Carl is here not so much as co-host, but as my Howard Stern to his Robin. And so.
Or your Batman to my Robin. Okay.
Yeah. We're not going to get into that because Robin's
cool.
Pretty powerful on Titans. So anyway, every once in a while, Carl really pisses me off and irritates me. And so when I tell him to go to the bomb shelter, just understand that this is a long-running joke in our lives, that he and a friend of ours who has passed away, Bill Reckoning, they came up with when they piss off Vicki, they run to the bomb shelter. So if you hear that phrase, you know what that means. And so just briefly, yeah. And I told Carl said that his room was padded in the bomb shelter, so we'll just take that as truth. Okay. Anyway, Vicki Loves Sci-Fi. Stephen created this show for me long ago. Gosh, 7-8 years ago, maybe 8-9 years ago. I don't even remember.
No, okay. Actually, seven.
Seven. Okay, because I know it was running in 2015, and so, but I can't remember full of work. Anyway, the whole thing that I've always done on my show is talk about science fiction. I think science fiction is the most maligned genre of all storytelling out there. People are constantly calling it juvenile for adolescence, and I'm just really, really sick of it. I've been really, really sick of it since I was a teen and grew out of my teens, which was about 100 million years ago, because I am a dinosaur. And so here's the thing. It has been my thought since I went into college, when I went into teaching, when I've done all the radio shows that I've ever done, is to connect real science with science fiction, to connect science fiction thought to real science, to show people, my audience out there, that these two things are very connected. And probably the Artemis 1 mission to the moon that just blasted off the week of November 15th wouldn't be happening. And the July 29th, 1969 landing on the moon of human beings probably wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for science fiction. fiction has deep roots that go back a couple of centuries. Great minds, you all know, Jules Verne and H.G. Wells and lots of other people really started bringing the new science together, Mary Shelley with her Frankenstein and reanimating of dead flesh, all of that stuff. All comes together. But because the genre had to start in comic books and serial anthologies, most people that first started reading it were, of course, the younger people with the fantastic ideas towards the future. And that the very first audience became a stigma for science fiction, which the people like Isaac Asimov and Ray Bradbury and Robert Heinlein and so many others have tried to break. And yet, as a teacher in the 21st century, I was put down by friends and colleagues and family members for trying to teach kids about science fiction. So the fight continues, the battle goes on, and here I am trying to continue that today. So first I want to start out, Carl, when did you first start reading science fiction?
When I was very, very young. I'd say by the time I was 6 or 7, I was reading. Certainly Ray Bradbury, S is for Space, R is for Rocket. And that would be 1960, mid-60s. I'm not going to say. But yeah.
Okay. Just like all of us who love science fiction, started in our early reading years through our teens, and a lot of us stuck with it. Many, many, many astronauts, engineers, astrophysicists, lots and lots and lots of people that have changed our world with technology have pointed back to science fiction in their youth and in their formative years, in their young adult years, that gave them the inspiration to take their ideas, look at the science of them, and move them forward into our reality. Excuse me just a second. Sorry, I am not sick. And so what I want to do at the beginning of my show every week is begin with some science that is prevalent for today and work it into the show's theme, whatever that theme might be. And today our theme is going to stretch from, the moon mission, Artemis 1, and a really wonderful article that was published today from Vox.com by a young woman named Kelsey Burr about AI. And so we're going to move into these two ideas from science to science fiction. I hope that you will enjoy this. Then we're going to top off the end of the program with some science fiction performances, actors and actresses who have given their all to their science fiction roles that should have been nominated for Oscars. They should be nominated for lots. I'm sorry, I hope you can't hear that beeping. That's the bad part of technology. Okay, so let's just start with going to the moon. Our moon is named Luna, the moon goddess, and she's there almost every single night. She's very important. From the time that primitive humans looked up in the night and watched phases of the moon and grew rituals and traditions around her, discovering that our seasons go along with the moon and its phases, the moon has been important to all life on Earth. And then this fantastic thing happened. The moon in this new genre called science fiction began to be written about. Going to the moon. And then finally, in real life, real time, in Carl and my lifetime, we had a president who said the United States of America is going to set a human being on the moon. And within less than a decade of that statement, the United States of America did that. So the moon has been really super important. Do you remember that, Carl?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We were all glued to the TV. Absolutely.
Yeah, I was eating pancakes. I remember precisely what I was doing. And so the moon mission, the new one that finally got off the ground, Artemis, it's called Artemis. The rocket is, the whole mission is called Artemis. There are three missions, Artemis 1, 2, and 3. Artemis 2 is really, really going to be spectacular because it's going to do something that we've never done before. But first, Artemis 1. Just like to say that this rocket that is now in its second stage of its mission, the Orion space module, which you could actually call it a spaceship, is in orbit around the moon, and it has done this thing, and I want to mention it precisely because as science fiction moves into science reality, words are created. And this new word that I want to say, CubeSat, is something that we're all going to be aware of that you might not be aware of yet. And it sounds science fiction-y, but it's happening right now. The Orion spaceship has these lots of experiments on it. And it sent off these little tiny satellites, which are cubes. And they call them CubeSats, for cube satellites. And they are circling the polar regions of the moon. And yes, they're called polar regions because it's the top of the moon and the bottom of the moon. Even though there's no ice, they still call them polar regions, okay? And so the CubeSats are just tiny little squares of satellites that gather specific information. And I can see certainly in our future how these are going to be deployed everywhere, probably Mars and Venus next. That's my prediction. So anyway, CubeSats are going to be in your vocabulary. And so Artemis 1 is going to take all this information, do all this research so that Artemis 2 can be launched. And in that is going to be a live crew. Human beings, and they are going to go out into orbit around the moon and Earth farther than any other human beings have ever gone. That sounds science fiction right there, but it's going to be real when they do it, and that'll be the first time that has ever happened. So science fiction into science, real life. Then Artemis 3 is going to plant human beings on the moon, and it's going to be a big to-do because it's going to be the first female to set foot on the moon. I can't wait till that's over with, so it'll just be people and not male, female, he, she, it, whatever. People will be on the moon again, and that is super important. So I wanted to start off the start this off with the moon. And Carl, I was wondering, do you have any favorite science fiction films that have to do with the moon?
Well, there will be two, but one we will mention later when we get into the actors. But the one I remember was one I saw early. It was on the Chiller Theater, I'm sure, in Pittsburgh, and that's Destination Moon. It's a 50s film. There's also another one called Countdown from the 60s I really like. But those are more scientifically based, both of those. one in the 50s, one in the 60s. Countdown was actually done a year before the actual moon landing, so it's very realistic. Decimation Moon, not so much, but damn, is it good. You know the one I mean, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course. I'm looking at the picture of it right there. I have it in my library, in fact, my DVD library. It was hard to get a hold of. And we'll talk about that particular film later in other shows. And the movie that you didn't want to mention, of course, we're going to talk about this at the end of the show. That is Moon. And it's a really great film about prospecting the moon and what would happen if we just left the moon to mining its minerals without ever thinking about colonizing it. And it's an eye-opener. And then my fun film about the moon right now just came out. It's fun. It has no basis in reality. Is Moonfall. Came out with Chris Pratt. It's just stupid fun. Okay. I wanted to mention that. But if you want something that is more realistic, First Man and then Ad Astra, these films have much more science in them. They are science fiction, of course, but the moon figures to be pointed in both these films. There's also the great 2001, where the moon is the first destination of our fated astronauts. And so there are plenty of science fiction films out there that have to do with our moon, Luna. And so if you were thinking about that, wanting to watch a moon movie, there's a couple of them. You can, of course, Google science fiction films about the moon, and there's all kinds of them. I would recommend one film called actually Prospect, and this film is not about our moon, but it has Pedro Pascal in it, which is you know him as one of the Dornish in Game of Thrones and also The Mandalorian. It's a good little film, really lighting on a moon in outer space. Okay, so now let's change the subject to this wonderful article I read from Vox.com, Vox.com, about AIs. I personally am afraid of AIs. I am not even going to try to pretend that I'm not afraid that some scenario like the Terminator will happen, or not Terminator, but an AI that takes over the world and decides that humans are the virus. These things are definitely a fear of mine. I've read lots of stories and everything. Carl, do you have a fear of AI, you know, really smart AI?
Can I just say the Terminator?
Okay.
Yeah. And there's so many more. I think really it goes back, if you think of AI and computers, you go back to the Forbin Project, or you go back to Harlan Ellison and I Have No Mouth, But I Must Scream. Can I just say, fuck yes?
Yeah. Well, this young lady, Kelsey Piper, who works for Vox, she put together a really fantastic article. It is so in-depth. It's good science. It's good speculation. She has great interviews with scientists and technicians. And she paints a picture that is scary. And she's not trying to scare you out of throwing your smartphone away or anything like that. But she is worried, as I am, that these things that we are creating, and let's see, they are these machines that learn from other machines, these algorithms. Yeah, we use algorithms every single day, from where to go to what to shop, you know, what the bargains are. They talk to you all day long. You might not even be realizing the fact that these AIs that have been created over the past 50 to you personally all day long. Well, what she has in, I want to give you the name of the article. It's on Vox.com. Her name is Kelsey Piper, dated today, about 6 hours ago. AI experts are increasingly afraid of what they're creating. That says it all. Okay? These AIs are taught different things by different people all over the world. You and I take for granted that the people that are programming these AIs know the difference between right and wrong, between good manipulation, which I don't know if there is any good manipulation, and evil manipulation. There's plenty of that. Human beings give AIs, these algorithms, limitations and proximities to go out into the world and problem solve. Do you understand what I'm saying? Problem solve.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so what does that mean to you, Carl? Are you going to ask the AI to help you?
It's the whole thing. You know, I'm a chess player, right? And
right.
They've had these machines over the years that basically take a chess situation and posit the best move. And it's become such a situation over the years that very few people, if any, can beat them. So it's a matter of, you know, when you learn not what to do, right? And you learn what to do, and you may make mistakes along the way, but the aggregate of that for a machine is that they know the best moves and the best things to do, you know, in a chess problem. And that's the thing. You learn, and machines can definitely learn, and that is a scary thing, and if they become self-aware, that's even scarier. Go ahead, Vic.
Well, they don't even have to be self-aware to be a danger to human beings. It's that learning thing, and it's that solution thing. If one of the programmers, or say a set of 10 programmers, were to program an AI with finding the solution and implementing the solution to the acidity and destruction of the world's oceans. That in itself, it doesn't have to be sentient to set into motion all kinds of solutions that are detrimental to the human race. How many people across the world eat fish every single day? One of the problems of our oceans is overfishing. So if an AI had the ability to stop overfishing, how many humans would starve? That's just a simple, simple scenario to what can happen without an AI being sentient and creating a solution and then implementing that solution that can end up as the extinction of human beings. It's a fascinating article, and I encourage you to look it up, Vox.com, Kelsey Piper, the title, AI Experts Are Increasingly Afraid of What They're Creating. Now, Carl, do you have some, we're not going to get into them at the end of the show, but do you have any favorite AI films that you'd like to mention right here to go along with this?
Well, I think for those of our generation, the one that really scared the living crap out of us was Colossus, the Forbin Project.
Right. That was one of the first.
Right. And I would suggest that particularly for those that don't know that film, because that, as far as film is concerned, is where it all started as far as AI. I don't know what you thought of it, but I thought Ex Machina was good. I didn't think it was outstanding, but I thought it was really good.
Well, I
those
thought
are the two that come to mind.
That film has a I really think that the real point of that film starts at the end. I mean, what happened during the film should be the first half, and then the second half of the film should be what starts at the end. Because that's
and
when
actually,
the AI
Alex
is actually...
Garland is considering... Actually, Alex Garland is working on a sequel to that, by the way.
Yeah, that would be... That would be a great idea because AI loose in the world. Other films that go along kind of with this, they've really films that show the superintelligence of AI coming back to bite humans in the butt, like iRobot. Not quite the way Asimov wrote the story, but still a good film. I really like it. There's a film Upgrade. There's a film Archive. And then there's the new TV series, Peripheral, Amazon, that touches on this. So, and then also Star Trek, the motion picture, the very first film of Star Trek, deals with the superintelligence, the AI. And then also Star Trek, the original series, had two, in its second season, had two stories to do with this. One was called The Changeling, and one was called The Ultimate Computer. And in both scenarios, humans did not fare well at all. So that's the second season of the original Star Trek. Star Trek series, if you want to hunt those down, The Changeling and The Ultimate Computer. Okay? These things are scary, and you should put, if you don't know what deep learning is when it comes to AI, you should educate yourself on that concept, because that concept right there should scare you, and you need to understand that machines are now allowed to see human interaction anymore. We think too slowly, and we want them to come up with solutions right now, because we are that instant gratification society, which is probably going to be the death of us. But anyway, deep learning is something that you should become familiar with. And a lot of these films are really good. Watch Her with Academy Award-winning performance. Not award-winning, but should have been nominated. Joaquin Phoenix did his performance was absolutely stellar in that science fiction show, movie. Yes. And so that's a good segue into, why don't you, after I introduce it, speak on Moon, okay, Carl?
Sure, I can do that.
Our last segment, and we're going to run overtime. I had no idea this would run overtime, but it's just now about 30 minutes into the show, so we're going to run about 10 minutes overtime, talking about these science fiction performances that are absolutely incredible. Why these actors and actresses have not been nominated for their performances goes back to that prejudice that idea that science fiction is only for the adolescent. And even if great actors give great performances, they're still ignored because science fiction is only for young adolescents, usually males. Okay? It's just so wrong. So I wanted to end this show with some of these performances. And since we've already talked about the moon, Carl, will you talk about the science fiction film Moon?
Okay, so Moon was in the aughts. Don't have the date exactly with me, but Sam Rockwell starred in it. And basically, that's the only person in the movie. It's basically him and the voice of Gertie, which is this computer with emoticons. And he is mining the moon. He's waiting to go back. And through an accident, he finds out that he has been cloned. And he finds another one of him. And it is an amazing, amazing performance by Sam Rockwell. I remember when it came out, and it was 2009, that everybody was thinking he'd be up for an Academy Award. And he wasn't.
Yes.
And that totally is a just a snub beyond belief. Because he is absolutely incredible in this film.
Den of Geek, I want to quote what they said, arguably about Sam Rockwell's performance, arguably one of the performances of the year, 2009. It seems that Rockwell was overlooked simply because he'd made the mistake of putting all his creative energy into a sci-fi character. Really? Still 2009 and it still goes to today. I would like to just mention the film Under the Skin, 2014. It is a creepy sci-fi film, no doubt. Lots of people didn't get it, but lots of people did. And it borders horror because science fiction and horror sometimes are very good companions, but it is pure science fiction. And Scarlett Johansson is an alien who is stranded on Earth, and she is quite alien. And her performance, there's hardly any dialogue in this, even monologue, there's hardly any, as this creature who is trying to survive in this alien environment learns how to survive on Earth. What did you think of Under the Skin, Carl?
To be honest, I didn't care for it.
Tell
it didn't
us
hit me. That's a good question. I just felt it was too obtuse for its own good. I've never been a fan of the director's films. There's something that just doesn't work for me. And to be honest, I can't really nail it down why. But
that's
not a big fan.
Okay. You don't have to go to the bomb shelter, but because that was my mistake. Before introducing Carl, I should have told everyone that Carl isn't about story and he's not about anything else. It's all about the director. When it comes to film, if it's a director he doesn't like, well, you might as well forget it because he's just not going to like it.
That's not completely true. We
it's
can argue about
true.
This, but I'll let you go on.
What?
That was
a
raspberry.
And you don't like any Steven Spielberg, so we're not even going to get into that subject. So let's move on to Mad Max Fury Road, 2015. Charlize Theron. Her performance was hands down. What great, magnificent, brilliant. What more could you ask from an actor than all the things, all the emotions this actor went through to give this character life, and yet overlooked, totally, completely overlooked. How about a movie I know you like, Carl? Gattaca.
Love Gattaca. Love Gattaca.
Okay.
Many award-winning performances in that did not get nominated at all. I mean, there's at least three I can think of.
Yeah. Ethan Hawke and Jude Law, both of them.
And Alan Arkin. Alan Arkin,
and
too.
And Alan Arkin. Those three are so, so, so good in that film. And yet, nothing. Nobody talked about them. Nobody said anything. An overlooked movie for how many years before now it's one of those cult classics. Go all the way back to a movie that a lot of people know, black and white as it is, The Day the Earth Stood Still. Many people believe that Michael Rennie should have been nominated for his performance as the alien from another world. Okay. They name him Klaatu. I don't even know if his name is really Klaatu, but that's what the film seems to suggest. Okay. So he plays an alien, Klaatu. And if you've never seen the film, I urge you to hunt it down and just watch it. It's less than an hour and a half. And I think that once you start watching it, it's really hard to stop watching. Just as Vincent Price in the 1964 film, The Last Man on Earth, Vincent Price, does he ever give a terrible performance? Sometimes kind of cheesy, but not in this film. Nope, no nod. Oh, and your favorite science fiction film. What's your favorite science fiction film, Carl?
Solaris.
Yes. And Natalia Bondarchuk.
Bondarchuk.
Okay.
I was just about to say that as you weren't. So, yep.
Okay. Yes. So what do you think? What was so good about her performance?
Oh, it's just an amazing performance. The two, and actually, I gotta go with George Clooney in the remake too. They're both really good. The remake the remake is a little more structured on Chris Kelvin and his personal, whereas the original is more about the land where they came from, Russia, of course. But both Natasha McElhone's and Bondarchuk's performances really get a sense of loss and of regret in the terms of both of them for different reasons. But my God, it is an incredible performance, and you need to see the original. But I would also recommend the remake. The remake, Inverse just had a really good article on how the remake is being, you know, reassessed and how good it is. So,
yes,
you know,
I've
would recommend
liked it.
Okay.
Yes, I think that in George Clooney's acting career, it's one of his top performances. It is.
I agree.
A crime.
Absolutely.
It's a crime to overlook his performance in that film, because the emotion just comes just screaming out of him. The fear. There's a lot of fear in that story, and the fear that he feels also, and the regret. And it's just a great performance. Another overlooked performance because it's science fiction. How about this film, 1972, Silent Running, Bruce Dern?
You add the robots. Okay, that poker game is classic. But
okay,
Dern
robots
was
can't be nominated.
Amazing. What?
Robots can't be nominated.
Okay, yes, but Bruce Dern was absolutely fantastic in that film. Fantastic.
Yes, yes. And so I just want to mention really quickly Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. This is when we were younger, and I was stunned that he was left out of Oscar contention in 1977. I didn't understand back then why, but the prejudice. Same with Ian Holm in Alien. Give me a break. The man had us all fooled, okay? We do not know the twist in that film until it happens. Ian Holm's just my favorite, and I just watched The Fifth Element for Thanksgiving, as I always do, and I just love him. But in Alien, oh, my God, he's so scary. Then, of course, how could I not mention Rutger Hauer in Blade Runner? Just seriously, Rutger Hauer steals the film. There are lots of good actors in that film, Harrison Ford not being one of them. And who's not a fan of Harrison Ford? Me. Anyway,
yeah.
Rutger Hauer in that film absolutely brings the terror, the heartbreak of what's happening to the replicants right there to your face. And his ad lib at the end is just, it's historic. For film,
yeah.
Historic. Okay, and then one more film of yours that you really, 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 really like, and that's Jeff Goldblum in The Fly, 1986 version.
Absolutely.
Why do you like that? Yeah, why do you like that film so much?
You know what? It's a tragic romance. And it truly is tragic, and it earns its stripes. And the realization, and also you see the metamorphosis, not quickly, but you see how it affects him, how it affects her, and it's a very small story. There's only, seven people in that cast, I think?
And if you
total
watch
of seven
it,
people.
If you watch it closely, it's only really, the story only really unfolds in that room, in that house.
And it is the end of that. If your heart isn't torn out and shredded, something is wrong with you. Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a tragic, tragic story. Okay, two more honorable mentions here. The first time I saw The Truman Show, I was amazed. I was totally, completely amazed by the breadth of the story and the depth of Jim Carrey's acting abilities. I couldn't stop thinking about his character for a week. And how would you act if you were him? And then again, aren't we all a little bit him now, especially selfies and bullshit and algorithms? And did I say bullshit? I'm sorry. Jim Carrey, if you want to watch a great performance, go ahead and sci-fi at the same time, The Truman Show. And then one that is completely overlooked, always overlooked, 1998, the film, it's Aronofsky's Pie. Sean Gillette, I think that's how you say his name?
Gillette.
Okay, I never know French, pronounce that E at the end or not, you know. And so his performance in Pie is a strange, strange sci-fi film. If you really like math and you really like mental illness and you don't know the differences and how things can just kind of gel together and what the people on the outside versus the people on the inside, all that together, pi into infinity. It's just really great. It's an art film. It's filmed in black and white. It's better than what's the drug film he did?
Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah, it's better than that, I think. I think Pi's the better of the two. And
I agree.
So yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, I want to just mention two things very briefly. Also, Mark Margolyes in that film as a supporting character is absolutely fantastic. And you were going back to the Michael Rennie film. I just also wanted to mention Sam Jaffe in a supporting role. Also Academy Award.
But
okay,
Patricia
so I
Neal,
just want to mention that
too. Yeah, in The Day the Earth Stood Still, Patricia Neal is arguably the lead and main character.
Yeah.
And her performance is just fantastic. I mean, going from, you know, just her regular life to understanding the fear and then helping and then all of that, the whole range of emotion comes through. It's unbelievable. Great performance.
And if you can,
I
was just going to say, if you can allow me, I have one other runner-up that I want to mention.
Well, sure. You're the one running the time.
But you're the one that runs the show, so there you go.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
So I also want to mention another Cronenberg film, which is Videodrome. And you can – and James Woods in that film – you know, just incredible performance. Incredible. And yes, it's weird. It's strange. It's Cronenberg. What do you expect? But, oh my God, just a great performance. So I wanted to mention that before we went into the...
Yeah, you know, that just reminds me of Peter Weller in RoboCop. Of course, is never going to be nominated as best performance, but please, this is before CGI. Peter Weller had to do all that practical, okay? All of it was done practical. RoboCop, if that's not a great performance, I don't know what is. And still,
Ronnie Cox in that movie also.
Ronnie Cox in many science fiction, but yes, definitely that. So I think that this sort of makes my point as far as science fiction, going back to the beginning of the show. Science fiction is not for children. It's a good introduction for kids into the world of possibilities, of what science can do for human beings, for the betterment of life on Earth, for everything, technology, all of that. Science fiction is the introduction when we're young. Science fiction speculation, as we see in novels and in films, it leads to innovation, experimentation, and then invention. And so it's not an adolescent boy's genre. It is more than that. And I hope that people can start embracing the fact of this. I just want to mention The Expanse. The Expanse is a television show, but it has political intrigue that is happening in our lives right now. There's also a new film on Amazon Prime. It's not a film. It's a series, a limited series, meaning it's like a novel on TV called The English. And always, since the time of Star Trek, the original series, when when Gene Roddenberry said that Star Trek is just like wagon train to the stars, the genre of Westerns and the genre of science fiction have so much in common that the stories are the same because they're actually about people, people doing things. Think about a wagon train across the west of going west on the American plains. What are they other than explorers entering new territory and new experiences, things that are dangerous and kill them? Same as a group of astronauts in a spaceship going out exploring. Same concept. And what do you have in common? The human being. So I would recommend watching The English if you like Westerns. It's not for the faint-hearted. That is for certain. But it's a damn good story. And it's more like what I think happened in America in the 1800s, the late 1800s, than so many other things. And so, I think, if you have anything else to say, Carl, I think we're done.
Well, I will say this. I want to go into a little bit of house cleaning right now, housekeeping, and just let you know what's coming up on Deviant Legion. So, tomorrow, Rachel and I, and hopefully Doc, will be coming together to do a commentary watch on one of my favorite films of all time. And that's Gremlins 2, The New Batch. And that's going to be a lot of fun. Then on Thursday, on Wednesday, Doc will be back. Eric will be back with Voices from the Bog. And on Thursday, we have the return of a very good friend of mine in front of the podcast, Scooter McRae. And he directed Shatterdead and also 16 Tongues, which is being released in a new remastered and renovated edition. And we're going to be talking about that. And then I can tell you that on Saturday, we will be doing another commentary watch, but I'm not sure what that's going to be yet. So that's what we have so far in all of our shows. We'll be at 8 p.m. EST, and all of our shows and previous shows can be found here on Blog Talk Radio and on the Deviant Legion Facebook page. So there you go.
So this Thursday we are not doing a Doctor Who show.
Unfortunately not. We could do it Wednesday.
Nope.
No, okay. Sorry, no, we're not. I'm sorry, but Scooter came in and was the only day you could come. So I apologize about that.
Yeah. You don't have to apologize. Just let me know.
Yeah, I will. In fact, you and I will talk after the show and set that up. Okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, then, Deviant Legion, always at the end of all podcasts, announces what is upcoming. So that will be at the end of my show also until I make it back to Kay's dad when Stephen and I will be doing Vicky Loves Sci-Fi. But for now, we're on Deviant Legion, and we want to thank Deviant Legion for hosting us, me. I do not talk in the third person. I'm not that crazy. Not yet.
Let's talk about schizophrenia. No, let's not. Okay.
Yeah. So as far as the first Vicky Loves Sci-Fi on Deviant Legion, I think that's a wrap. And I thank you all for listening. And just remember, anything that I have mentioned, any of the films or articles or things that are happening in the world, you can find them if you Google. I tried to make certain that you knew the titles and where to find all of everything. The Artemis mission, of course, you can find at NASA. I forgot to mention that. So if you go to the NASA website, it's easy to find. So I think with that, it's time to say goodbye and thank you for listening. Carl?
Okay, let's call it a podcast, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Vicki, for being with us, and we're very, very happy to have you here. Just want you to know.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. And let's say good afternoon, good night, good morning, whatever it is to you.
It's still morning here. Okay, goodbye.
Goodbye.